Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Here's the latest on the reclamation and recovery efforts at the site of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Governor Moore met with the Maryland congressional delegation and lawmakers on Capitol Hill to talk about federal support for rebuilding the bridge. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott announced what he calls an action plan that the city will implement in response to the bridge collapse. It includes direct support for families of the six construction workers who were killed, a program to subsidize wages for businesses impacted by the closure of the Port of Baltimore, and financial assistance to port workers whose employment status is affected by the crash. The General Assembly also passed the Port Act to help port workers and businesses. We'll talk about the other actions Maryland lawmakers took in this year's session and the results of a new Goucher College Baltimore Banner poll in the Baltimore mayor's race tomorrow on the Midday News Wrap. Today, it's midday on money. If history is a guide, there will be more than a few people biting the bullet and finally getting around to doing what they've been meaning to do for the past few weeks, which is filing their taxes. The deadline is Monday at midnight unless you file for an extension. There are all sorts of options for filing your taxes. If you live in one of the 12 states in which the IRS has a pilot program and you meet certain qualifications, you can file for free directly on the IRS website. Maryland isn't one of those states, so we've got to go to either a tax consultant or a professional and use software programs that various companies make available for a fee. Tax season is the time of year when a lot of folks start thinking about their financial situation and focus on planning their financial future. So we're going to talk today about taxes and saving and investing and strategizing for that financial future today. A little later, we'll welcome back our friends, the financial advisors Nicholas Abrams of Opulencia, a financial services firm in Hunt Valley, and Deborah Owens, a wealth coach and the founder of Wealthy You, a financial wellness company that specializes in helping women navigate investment decisions. But we begin with Beverly Winstead, an award-winning tax lawyer. Her firm, Beverly Winstead LLC, represents individuals and businesses in disputes with federal and state agencies. Beverly Winstead joins us here in Studio A. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, if you have a question for Beverly Winstead, 410-662-8780, a question about taxes and tax law, our email midday@wypr.org. So Beverly, let's start with options people have for filing their taxes. There are folks who can help people, particularly people whose income isn't particularly high and whose tax returns maybe aren't even all that complicated. There are free services. It's not just the IRS offering free services in 12 states, is it?
No, it's not. The IRS, as you said, is offering that, also the pilot program, but also there are programs called VITA, V-I-T-A, that you can Google, and they are also available to help people that meet a certain income threshold or below. I think maybe it's $60,000 and below. And then also there's AARP. AARP also helps people that are considered, I would say, maybe low income, that can and don't have complex situations, right? They can help you for free.
Yeah, so there are options.
You
don't have to pay for a software program or that kind of stuff. Filing an extension. If you file an extension, does that, meaning you tell the IRS, I'll get around to filing my return, but not quite by April 15th. We're going to do it in June or October or whenever. Does that affect your tax situation at all? Does it leave you open to owing more eventually?
It doesn't leave you open necessarily to owing more, but I'll get this caveat. People have to remember, an extension to file is not an extension to pay. So if you file that extension and you have a balance due, if you are able to at least pay something on the amount that's due, that will help reduce the accrual of penalties and interests that continue to accrue on unpaid balances.
Because the penalties and interest can really add up quick, can't they?
Oh, yeah. The interest, in the past, sometimes, you know, the interest wasn't that bad because it's whatever the Fed rates were. So in the day, back in the day, it was maybe 3-4%, but now you're talking about 8%. And so we encourage people, again, if you do have the ability to pay, go ahead and try to pay something.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in the 2023 tax year that we're all filing for and due on Monday. That's new about the tax law. I mean, taxes during the Trump administration, there was a big tax bill, and you know, a lot of people had their taxes cut. But is there anything in particular in this year that taxpayers and tax filers should be aware of?
So most of, as you stated, you have the Trump era, and then you have everything that happened during COVID. Most of the tax laws, at least federally, have reverted back to a lot of the Trump era tax reform. But there are some additional things that we see, the credits, like with electric vehicles, that's a really big one. You have like the solar and residential credits, those kinds of things. So that's at the federal level. States also have passed a lot of different programs that will benefit taxpayers. So I would just say that's why sometimes you do want to work with a professional as opposed to just kind of going through the software yourself, because we know how to probe to be able to ask additional questions to see whether or not you qualify for some of these programs.
When you are married, generally speaking, it makes sense to file jointly with your spouse. Is that right?
A lot of times, yes. In particular, when you have kids, because there are certain credits that are available when you are jointly filed, as opposed to, you know, just filing separately. But there are instances, like if one spouse has back child support or one spouse has a already a tax obligation, that you may want to consider filing separately.
Ah, so there are exceptions to the rule then.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I guess with the IRS, there's an exception to every rule.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some of these credits. One of them is the child tax credit. There's also, you can get a credit for child care, can't you? For, you know, if you drop your kid off at daycare before you go to work. So let's take those two different things. The child tax credit, you know, our kids, if they're dependent and with us at home, they can save us some money.
Right. So the child tax credit, what people have to know and understand is that the child tax credit is available when you claim your child, and it's up to $2,000 generally. And it's different because COVID, you could get up to $3,600, right? And one of the things I do like about the legislation now, it increased the adjusted gross income. So more people actually qualify for the child tax credit. What I don't like about the child tax credit, and I'm gonna be honest, is it actually cuts off at age 16. So from when your child turns 17, which I don't understand why Congress feels that a 17-year-old is no longer a dependent or at least qualifies for the child tax credit. But when they're 16 and below, generally you are able to get that credit, right?
But if they're still in high school and they're 17 and they're living at home,
yes, yeah, no credit.
They're costing you money, not saving
you money. They're costing
you
money.
Of course, they spend most of the rest of the time of the year costing you money anyway. But
absolutely.
Now, how about a child care tax credit? So for daycare, you can take that off your taxes? How's
yeah,
that work?
So it works. What you have to know is that the max you can get is about $2,400 in that category also. And it really is a percentage of what you pay in child care. And it's based upon also your adjusted gross income. So higher income earners end up getting less of a credit than a lower income person. They get more of the credit because it's really percentage based.
So it's based on your income,
right?
More than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And with the child tax credit, is that also the case that it's based on your income? If you have a higher income, do you get less of a child tax credit?
For the most part, most people, when you're married, filing jointly, the threshold is about $400,000. It's been a real long time since I've looked at that particular AGI threshold.
But so, it's high.
But it's high.
Yeah.
I know it's high. So most people actually will get the child tax credit. And so we see, again, a lot more people qualifying under the new tax reform as opposed to when I first started, like 15 years ago.
Right? Yeah. When the tax law was changed a few years ago, one mm-hmm. of the things that happened was there was a standard deduction that was much higher than it had previously been. So I guess to a lot of people, are you finding, you know, it's in their best interest to take the standard deduction rather than, you know, keep track of all the individual things that they might have been able to, you know, apply as ways of reducing their taxable income? I mean, charitable contributions you know, the expenses they might have related to their work, something like that. Is the standard deduction kind of the way a lot of people are going? How's that working?
You know what? That is a very good question, and it is a very complex question because there's so many things that we talk about. But it's so funny because I just had this conversation when I was speaking over at NYU. And one of the things you have to know is that for certain states, on the federal side, the standard deduction is a lot better, right? But on the state side, some states don't conform to the federal standard deduction. Maryland is one of those states. So sometimes if you take the federal standard deduction, you're going to end up owing more on the state side than if you itemized.
Oh, so the state return and the federal return, two different deals.
Yes, two different deals.
Two different deals. Wow. Beverly Winstead's a tax lawyer and the managing partner at Beverly Winstead LLC. If you have a tax question, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So there was a law passed back in 2021, Beverly, called the Corporate Transparency Act. It was passed back in 2021, but it takes effect in 2024. So for businesses, what does this mean for them? What do they need to stay hip to?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up because I'm telling everybody, you know, they're about the law, right? There's a requirement now for most businesses, most particularly small businesses, not large corporations, that you have to file a something called a beneficial ownership interest report. We call it the BOI report. You go to the Financial Crimes Network, and this law was passed, really, I think it was a part of Congress trying to prevent money laundering, right? And that's why you file it at the Financial Crimes Network. Congress really wants to know who actually owns these companies, these small businesses. And so
you hear a lot about shell companies and all that stuff.
Yeah. So if you have a LLC, if you have a small S corp, if you have a C corp, then you need to make sure you dig deeper to see whether or not you have a requirement to file that BOI report. And the reason why it's important that people know this is because the fines are so harsh. Congress wants people to know that, look, we're not playing. So the penalties are up to $500 per day that the return is late, or up to 2 years imprisonment, right? And so the basic scheme is that if your business has, if you had the business prior to January 1st, 2024, you have until January 1st, 2025 to file this report. If you open a new business in 2024, you have 90 days to report your ownership interest at the FinCEN network.
Yeah, so owning a small business is complicated. I mean, you mentioned S Corp and LLC and all this stuff. I mean, there's a difference and there's a tax, impact depending on what kind of business you are and how you're registered. So that obviously requires a professional to give you some advice. When people owe a lot of money to the IRS for whatever reason, maybe they just stop filing their taxes for a while. Maybe they owed so much they couldn't pay it and they just sort of, you know, went fetal under the table. I mean, who knows, for whatever reason. And you're representing some of those kinds of folks. What is the leverage they have? What is the posture that you usually take with the IRS? Is the IRS open to, you know, a negotiation to say, oh, there were certain circumstances that affected this particular person's life, and so, you know, we're going to give her a break? I mean, what's the attitude of the IRS these days?
IRS is about collecting right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest with you. They've been relaxed for years because of COVID, but you know, I spend a lot of money going to various conferences because I want to know what IRS is thinking at this point in time. And in December, I was in Vegas at the Criminal and Civil Tax Fraud Conference. I actually spoke out there. And one of the things that the commissioner said is that we're about collecting now. Congress gave us all this money. And so we are going to spend the money. We're going to hire and we're going to begin to aggressively go after people that have not paid. So I tell, you know, anybody that when you owe IRS, there are options, but the important thing is that you got to move in the right direction. Part of moving in the right direction is to be able to contact a professional like me, if you are low income, there are low income taxpayer clinics, which I also run at the University of Maryland. So whatever you do, don't bury your head in the sand. You know, there are options, but you have to be proactive.
And they'll set you up with a payment plan kind of thing where you could pay a certain amount every month and that kind of thing. They are open to that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a payment plan. It could be a hardship status. We do a lot of negotiating currently non-collectible statuses for people which are CNC status. We also do a lot of settlement negotiations with IRS where people owe IRS and, you know, we settle for what they say, pennies on the dollar, you know, to allow the taxpayer to get a fresh start. So, again, there's options.
All right. Well, this is really helpful. Beverly Winstead, tax lawyer. She's the managing attorney for Beverly Winstead LLC. So you got that next to your name.
Yes.
I bet you know what that
yes.
means. I have no idea. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
And up next, Midday on Money, we'll continue with two great financial advisors, Nicholas Abrams of Opulencia and Deborah Owens of Wealthy You. They'll answer your saving and investment questions on the other side of a quick break. So give us a call if you have a question, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll take a look back at the 2024 session of the Maryland General Assembly with Matt Bush, WYPR's news director, and Josh Kurtz, the founding editor of Maryland Matters. I'll also speak with Hallie Miller of the Baltimore Banner about the results of a new Goucher College Baltimore Banner poll in the Democratic primary for Baltimore mayor. Plus, Jaywin Russick will review Gem of the Ocean at Baltimore's Arena Players. That's the first in a series of plays by August Wilson that's going to be produced over the next year or so at local theaters. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday on Money. Joining me now, two wonderful friends of our show who are accomplished and successful financial advisors. Nicholas Abrams is the founder of Opulencia, a financial services firm in Hunt Valley. Nick, welcome back.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great, and thanks for being here. Deborah Owens is an author and the founder of Wealthy You, a financial wellness company that specializes in working with women. Debbie, welcome back to you as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Nick and Debbie are with us here on Zoom, and you are welcome to join us as well. Listeners, our number here, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. I want to start with a caller who has actually a tax question, but Beverly isn't here anymore. Beverly Winstead, our tax lawyer, but maybe one of you two guys can answer this. Nicole, you're on the line. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Tom, for having me and taking my call. My question is about filing for your teenager if they've worked like a summer job or even throughout the school year. If, you know, my son received a W-2, and I'm just wondering if he actually needs to file. I don't have it in front of me, but I don't recall there was even anything other than his Social Security taken out. There was no state or fed. So I'm wondering if we need to help him file before Monday.
Well, actually, Beverly Winstead has just popped back into the studio here. I don't know, Beverly,
Yay!
If you could hear that.
Excellent.
But this is good because our first caller has stumped our guests here. But and they certainly stumped me. But this is an interesting question. This is a teenager, a young student who worked a part-time job. And does that person have to file a tax return if she received a W-2 form?
So it really looks at, when you look at the W-2, look to see how much money was made. If it's less than $12,000, and then also look to see whether or not there are taxes withheld. Because if it's less than actually about $12,500 and there was taxes withheld, yes, file the return, because that way they get a refund of the taxes that they paid. So absolutely, they may have a filing, you may want to file.
Okay. Does that make sense, Nicole? Because you were saying it's a W-2 form, but they didn't take out taxes for Social Security and that kind of stuff? Is that right?
No, I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me because I'm kind of running and gunning out here, but I recall that they did take the Social Security out, but there was no state and there was no federal taking out, and I think he was under $4,000 that he made.
Okay.
So, I figured that was probably why there was no taxes taken out aside from Social Security, but I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, no, if it's less than that, if based upon what you're telling me, she shouldn't file.
Yeah, if it's below $12,000, which in this case it sounds like it is. Okay, but that's a good question, Nicole, and I appreciate it. So, Nick, when it comes to saving and when it comes to investing, it's never too young to start that, is it? So, I mean, this young man, Nicole's son, can start putting away some of the money he's earning even at this age. I mean, I always talk about, you know, the key to saving is to start it as early as you can, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the key, compounding interest. The earlier you can start saving, investing, and having that money work for you, the more money you will have in the future. So we always encourage our clients or people we run across who have teenage sons or daughters who are working. One of the best ways to do that is to establish a Roth IRA account. Because they do have earned income, they're able to set up that Roth IRA. They're able to invest, contribute up to $7,000 per year. You can do less, but the maximum for this year is $7,000 per year. And then that money can grow and accumulate. And we generally say, you know, money should double every 7 or 8 years. So as that money is accumulating and growing and doubling with compounding interest, your teenager, they leave that money alone, will be a millionaire when they get older.
Yeah, that's amazing. But it has to start early. Debbie Owens, you work with a lot of women in particular. What do you find the barriers that women face in particular when it comes to investing?
Well, part of it is discretionary income. For so many women, especially if they're a parent, you have all of these other expenses, right? For kids, they're in extracurricular activities. And so there's a tendency in some cases for women to feel like there's not enough for them to invest, even when they're not working. Oftentimes, they are contributing maybe up to the employer match. However, one of the things we try to do on Wealthy You is to encourage them to increase those contributions over time and to really look at how making that contribution in their retirement really impacts their take-home pay. So I think that's sort of the biggest challenge, is that I don't have enough to, because of all my other obligations. But, you know, that's a big reason that the gender wealth gap exists. It's because typically women are earning less, and so compared to men. And so as a result, if their incomes are less, their contributions are less as well.
Yeah. And Nick, it can be very challenging and difficult to find room in your budget for saving and investing for the future when it's really tough making ends meet, you know, month to month. But there are ways, there are strategies of doing it, I guess, aren't there?
Yeah, there is. And Tom, this is something that I've been kind of preaching on for years, that there is a huge wealth gap going on. You know, the middle class, as a lot of us know, has been eroding away for years and years. And of course, coming out of the pandemic, we've seen either a greater wealth gap. Excuse me. We've seen people in higher income brackets, you know, their income and their ability to save and invest has increased. But then people in the lower income brackets, we've seen that a larger struggle, especially with inflation. So we always try to tell people, number one, start with the employer-sponsored retirement plan, whether it's a 401k, 403b, thrift savings plan. Start contributing money to that. That is the easiest way to save money because it's coming right out of your paycheck, so you don't see it. And a lot of times you don't miss it when it's coming out, and your employers will contribute a match. So you put in a certain amount, your employer puts in a certain amount. That's the best way to get started, and then to be disciplined enough not to touch the money. Just let that grow, forget about it, and then as that starts accumulating, then you can start looking at other investment strategies and options. But always start with your employer plan first, and each year increase it a percentage. So if you're doing 3%, next year increase it to 4%. So that way you're starting to build and increase your savings.
410-662-8780 is our number. If you have a question for Nick Abrams and Deborah Owens about financial management, about financial planning, about your financial future, again, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. We have a caller, Lisa, on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Thanks for checking in.
Hello, everybody. It's more of a comment, really, than a question. I'm a part of a grouping called, a nonprofit called Invest York Road. And we have, our idea is to buy a commercial building and have it be invested by the local people with the wealth going back to the local people. And one thing we found is that there are people, a lot of us have very low, financial intelligence. So we put together a four-hour online financial class where we teach people about how to save, how to use your credit card wisely, how to look at your debt and how to get your debt down, and how to plan for your financial future in a very, very easy, very open way. Because one of the things that I think we found is when people start talking about their finances, they implode, they panic. Because there's such a sort of like almost like a morality around it. If you're not saving, you're not a good person. Do you guys find that, and how do you get over that? But these classes are online for anybody who feels that. Just come to Invest York Road. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it. And Deborah Owens, at Wealthy U, you have a what you call a blueprint for coming up with a good financial strategy. And one of them is to, one of the tenets of the blueprint is to shift from an earner to an owner mindset. That's interesting. What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, Tom, you've done your homework. You know, it's interesting. I do agree with her, her analysis of there just being a lot of shame around money and finances. But I would say that for so many of us, we were taught to focus on just earning more. But what we weren't taught is how to turn our income into wealth. And so what I mean by that, Tom, when we talk about making the shift in Wealthy You from an earner mindset to an owner mindset, what we're saying is that your ability to build wealth at any level, you know, no matter if you're making $40,000 or you're making $400,000, really is a function of you taking a portion of what comes in and doing what Nick just conveyed earlier about putting some funds away. And I think for most middle-class folks, and myself included, what I was taught was to earn more and buy more. And so the difference in that earner mindset really is that we've been taught to buy the things, and as we make more money, we can afford more, whether it's a more expensive home or a more expensive car. What the shift to a wealth mindset means is no, it's not a matter of buying the things, it's investing into things. And, you know, your previous caller talked about investing in, in real estate. I do believe that what is most important is what Nick does, and he's a financial planner, is that people have first the financial foundation, right? That they learn how to fundamentally spend less than what they make, save and invest the difference. And then the next step would be, as Nick conveyed, what's the easiest way to invest? Typically through your employer. And then once you've got those fundamentals down, then you can begin to explore other options and opportunities, as Nick so eloquently put. But fundamentally, we must stop buying the things just focused on buying things and focused on investing in things.
Yeah, discipline is a real big part of this, Nick. And in this particular climate, we just got news a day or two ago that inflation ticked up again from 3.4 to 3.5% on an annualized basis, which is still at 3.5%. It's still lower than it was a year ago. It was as high as 5% in March of 2023, and it's been on a downward trajectory for more than a year. But it comes, the question arises, are there particular kinds of investments that are good as a hedge against inflation when it comes to the interest rates being what they are, the significance of the announcement a day or two ago about a 3.5% inflation rate is that the Fed will likely now not reduce the interest rate, the prime rate, for a little while. They're gonna hold off on that. Any advice for people in terms of the kinds of investments they should be thinking of in this particular climate?
Yeah, Tom. But before I get to that, there's one thing I do want to piggyback on what Deborah spoke about. You know, one of the things when we talk about investing in general, you have to establish what your goals are. That's the key. A lot of people, I mean, myself included, with this world we're in of instant gratification, social media, you know, we set some goals, but then we're easily distracted by those goals. So when we're talking about investing, money management, financial planning, it's really about what your goals are and then finding the ways to get to those goals. You know, when we're looking at today's investment and climate, one of the big things, if you're looking at investing to outpace inflation because you want your money to work hard. So two things either have to happen. Either you work or the money works. Something has to work. So we're looking at money working and earning interest. We're looking at stocks, mutual funds, investments. Those are ownership in companies, like Deborah talked about, getting out of the, you know, worker mindset and the owner to the ownership mindset. That's how you build wealth, owning something. So if you're buying stock in a company, you are now a part owner of that company. And when that company makes money, you make money. And the way that the stock price goes up, or they pay out some type of dividend profit back to you as the owner, as the shareholder. So really looking at investing in stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, those are all different investment vehicles that are easy to invest in. Sometimes you can start as little as $50 or $100 to get into a mutual fund. So you can do that. You can do it monthly. You can do it in a lump sum and have that money sitting there and earning interest at a rate that outpaces inflation, because inflation is higher than we're used to. I call it a more normal inflation rate. As we look at interest rates, if you look years ago, interest rates were at 5, 6, 7%. We've just been accustomed to this low interest period that we were in for the last decade. Now we're back to more of a reality. I know the Fed had come out earlier this year stating, and there was speculation about the rate cuts they were going to do. I was very pessimistic about that. We might get one or two rate cuts this year, but I think we're kind of at a level where we're going to be at for a while. So we need to adjust, look at our investment strategy. You can't be too conservative, because if you're too conservative, your money is not going to outpace inflation. You're going to safely lose money. So really working with a professional to figure out the right mix is going to be the key.
And that's the kind of work that you do at your company, Opulencia. When people talk about getting a financial advisor, give us an overview of the kinds of services that you and the people in your industry provide.
Sure. So what we do, you know, we look at a person in a holistic standpoint, Tom. When you come to the office, we sit down and really it's a conversation about where you are, where you want to be. And we're looking at what things you've done right as far as money and what things we might have to tweak some. And a financial planner and a certified financial planner, and it's one of the advanced designations in the industry, we're really customizing a plan or a roadmap to help you get to your goals. And those goals, Tom, can be retirement planning. It can be portfolio asset management. It can be insurance planning. estate planning and tax planning. But it's really sitting down, seeing where you are now, where you want to get to, and coming up with that strategy to get you to that goal. And I always tell people, you have to ask yourself, who's on your team? Every successful person has a team around them. And we tell people, for a financial standpoint, you need a good financial planner, a good estate planning attorney, a good tax professional, and a good insurance professional. Those are the key members of your team. So we work with your team to make sure you're able to achieve your goals and get to where you want to be.
And Debbie Owens, before we take a break, just briefly tell us what Wealthy You does. You do a lot of teaching. You do a lot of courses and classes that help people frame some of the questions that Nick is talking about.
Absolutely. I think you conveyed that in the right definition. We get people to get over their fear of going to see a Nick Abrams so that they can actually understand the advice that he's given. What we find is that compliance to financial plans that Nick puts together, oftentimes people sit down, they'll make the plan, and then the planners are wondering why it wasn't executed or implemented. And the point that we make is, before you can go to the head with the numbers, you have to get to the heart of it. And so often what is preventing people from following through has more to do with belief, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. So in Wealthy You, we really focus on that aspect of it, as well as understanding the terminology and the nomenclature, understanding what a stock, a bond, and all that is, so that then when those recommendations are given, they can be more easily understood and with less confusion and less fear. And typically what we find is that as the knowledge and financial acumen increases, so does risk tolerance and so does their ability to implement the types of strategies that CFPs like Nick provide.
Deborah Owens is the founder of Wealthy You and the author of a book called Wealth Secrets. Nicholas Abrams is the founder and of the financial services firm Opulencia. It's based in Hunt Valley. If you have a question about saving and investing, you can give us a call or send us an email. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. We will get to some of your questions on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WIPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Money today. We are talking investment, savings, planning for your financial future with Nicholas Abrams of Opulencia, a financial services firm in Hunt Valley, and Deborah Owens, a former vice president with Fidelity Investments, who is the founder of Wealthy You, a financial wellness company. Nick and Debbie are taking your questions and comments until the top of the hour, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So this is a question perhaps for Nick, perhaps for Debbie. I'm not sure, but let's start with you, Nick. Liz asks, is it better to save for your children's future education through a Maryland 529 account or a private investment account? What's your advice in that regard?
Options. With the Maryland plan, there are two different plans. There is the 529 plan, which is administered through T. Rowe Price, and there's also the prepaid college trust. Personally, I am always a bigger fan of the 529 plan because you have more control over what you put in, how the money is invested, and how you structure and access that particular account. There are options that you can do outside of a 529 plan, but a 529 plan is a great vehicle because now it's not only just for college, it's for K through 12 educational expenses as well. So with the 529 plan, you can invest as much, as little as you want. But when it comes to educational expenses, qualified educational expenses, you are able to access those funds without any penalty or without any tax liability. Plus, yeah, the money in the 529 plan grows tax deferred, tax free. So you're not paying any taxes or the interest as it's earning money.
Yeah. And again, when we talk about the length of time you're saving, if you have a very young child, 2-3 years old, good time to start a 529 account, because by the time that child is in high school or college, what an educational situation that may cost some money, you know, that interest and those investments will have compounded, and you know, you could find yourself with a good nest egg to help with those expenses. Let's go to the phones again to Naomi, who's on the line from Anne Arundel County. Naomi, welcome to the show. I think you have a question that Debbie will take up.
Hi, good morning, or afternoon, I should say. I'm calling on behalf of my mom. So I'm 35, but she's turning 65 this year. She makes about $45,000 and has some money in her retirement. She does most of the things that you suggested about employer matching and all that stuff. But she's invested very conservatively with the money she's saved. And I was just curious if, and she's also nervous about her future and retiring. She has a way to go before she can retire. So I guess my question is, at 65, is it too late to take some of the money she has saved and go riskier with her investments?
That's a great question, Naomi.
That's a great question. And what I would say, Anne, and it's a conversation that we have in Wealthy You a lot, that's really another reason for the gender wealth gap. If you look at how our women invest, they are risk averse. And so a significant amount of their savings has been in fixed income types of investments, which are typically, they feel like they're safe and they're not going to lose money, but their money's not growing. And so to that end, one of the things I would say to your mother, and what I would say to any woman who feels like now that they're older, they have to be conservative, is that women outlive men. And so our major risk is not dying too soon, is living too long. And so to that end, I would say that your mother, yes, could invest in stocks or stock equities, but there are levels of risk there too. And so for her, she would want to probably be in something, if it's in her retirement plan, a conservative index fund, like an S&P 500, a basket of stocks that will give her diversification, but the companies within it are very large. So in that regard, yes, if the market goes down, you're going to see the value of it go down, but that's the way she will keep a hedge against inflation. And I think that you said, Nicole, so Nicole, what I would say is that through her employer, I bet you there's some calculators that are available for her to kind of plug in and for her to be able to determine what portion of that retirement should be in a more, you know, and I don't even want to call it aggressive, because when we say aggressive, people think high volatility, right? What I want to say, a growth-oriented fund that's going to keep up with the inflation, which historically has been about 3%.
Yeah, and of course, anytime you have that kind of investment, the line doesn't go straight up. It goes up, it goes down a little, then it goes up and down. So, you know, it just depends. I mean, Nick Abrams.
But I think the benefit, I want to bring up one other, you know, the benefit to that, those types of investments being in your employer-sponsored plan, is you are investing paycheck to paycheck. So you are going to be contributing. If the stock market goes down, you're going to be buying those shares in your mutual fund at lower prices. As they go up, the value of your investments are going to go up. So that is a great way to invest and do what's called dollar cost averaging and kind of average out your cost instead of everything being put in at one time.
And Nick Abrams, the stock market goes up. It does go down. I mean, 2022, as I understand it, wasn't such a great year for the stock market, but 2023 was much, much better. Are people going to find that, you know, their assets improved considerably last year because of the way the stock market behaved?
Well, yeah, so we're seeing a couple things, Tom. You're right, 2022 was a bad year in the market, but we had a great run for the past 10-plus years before then. Even in 2020, when the pandemic came up, we had a quick dip in the market in March of 2020, but it was right back up in April and still going strong. When you look at 2023, a lot of the market gains for the first part of the year was that Magnificent Seven. So those were the, you know, the AI, IT stocks. But then we saw the last part of 2023, the market as a whole just take off, and it's been going strong. So when you look overall at your portfolio, yes, they're going to be sometimes you'll see a negative on your statement. But when you look at the long term, the markets always make money. You know, if you're in a good portfolio, you're invested, diversifying, and you've got the right advisor, the right team around you, you should do very well with investing.
We have an email from Matt who says, what impact on charities and nonprofits has there been since the standard deduction was increased and since that change has taken place? PBS did a report about this, Matt. It goes back to 2018. That's the most recent thing we could dig up. And individual giving did decline a little bit from about 70% to 68% of people making charitable donations because they were no longer deducting the specific donations they made. They were taking the standard deduction instead. We just have a couple of minutes left. Let's go to Beth in Catonsville. Beth, what's your question for our guests?
Hi, Beth. Hi. Hi, hello, guests. My question is, I'm a federal employee, and I am participating in the TSP, mm-hmm. and my money, and I don't admit this to everybody, but it's in the G fund.
All right, you guys are talking inside baseball. Beth, we got to have a quick question because we're almost out of time. What do you want to know?
Okay. And I'm scared to just throw it out there to one of the funds because I just know. And I've been earning, but not earning a whole lot, obviously, as you know. So
no, it's right. Not earning a whole lot. I just got to jump in because I know we've got a couple of minutes. Listen, you have other options. You don't have to put it all. You can, if anything, the C fund is a broad-based index fund. And if you look at what it's done historically versus that G fund or the F fund, you'll see that that fund is outperformed. And so what I would encourage you to do is certainly if you're in G fund, it says that you're really risk averse. So baby steps. How about, you know, putting a percentage of what you already have in the S and the C funds, which are, you know, Okay. Basically equity funds. You've also...
And I'm sorry, okay. Debbie, we're going to have to call it there, but okay. I guess these letter name funds are only for government employees,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, okay. Through their retirement plan.
All
Yes. Right.
Well, we appreciate it, and we'll have you back to answer more questions. Deborah Owens, the author of Wealth Secrets and the founder of financial services firm Wealthy You, and Nick Abrams, the founder of Opulencia, financial services company up in Hunt Valley. Many thanks. Always appreciate having you guys on. Thanks so much. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll talk about the General Assembly that finished up Monday night. We'll talk about a new poll in the Baltimore mayor's race, the Democratic primary. So that's coming up tomorrow, along with a review of a new play by August Wilson. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WIPR.